Okay, we are back, and I hope that more and more people are figuring out what's really going on here. And I'd urge you to take a look at the top story and headlines briefly. But go ahead and listen to it. It's Scott Ritter talking again about October 7th, the day of the horrible Hamas planned attack, planned by both sides, and how many Israelis were killed. Used to be 13, 1400, then they decided to subtract the 200 Hamas fighters that they claim were killed. That knocked it down to 1200. They shouldn't count them, no. So the 1200 Israelis were dead. If that's true, I don't believe one word that comes out of that country's government, nor our own here. It's not our government anyway. They're all psychopathic liars. Nothing can be believed. And if you'll notice, there are very few stories coming out about the actual fighting that's going on all over Gaza. Those Israelis are dying. A lot of them are being killed. Tanks are being blown up. You're not seeing any of it. It's all sanitized. The latest I heard is that Israeli snipers are now shooting people about in and out of anyone they see around the big hospital, the Al-Aqsa, or whatever it is. I can't get it right. Aksha Hospital. They're killing them. So, okay, if you remember, any of you who didn't hear the earlier part tonight where I mentioned the Israeli Apache attack helicopters, American, donated to Israel, of course, how they were just mowing down everybody. They weren't trying to differentiate between Hamas fighters and all the Israelis who were at that concert, that outdoor desert concert. I don't know how many were killed there. Cars were blown up. These helicopters were saying, "We can't tell who's who." And they were told to use your best judgment. And they kept unloading their entire armament capacity, going back, getting reloaded, and going back up in the air and blasting the hell out of anybody they saw. And I'm of the belief now that of the 1,200 alleged Israelis who were dead, the real figure might be 700, 800, that more than half of those were killed by the IDF, the Israeli military. I don't think Hamas was nearly as effective as the fairy tale tells. Says Scott Ritter, quote, "The number one killer of Israelis wasn't Hamas or any other Palestinian faction. It was the Israeli military itself." And yet the world does nothing. Nothing. And the slaughter continues. Mitchell Henderson is back with us tonight. Mitch is watching this with binoculars very closely. How are you, Mitch? Welcome back.
I'm doing good, and I want to talk about exactly that. I want to give everybody information that will help them understand the lies and give them information so they don't fall for the nonsense that comes over that is purported to be news. Okay.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Go to it. Let's go.
Okay, so I'm going to start with naval strategy. Okay, so Marxism believes in destroying the old and creating the new. The only thing that is old is the lame and unimaginative lies they tell us. They tell old lies because they believe that if it worked before, it will work again. Jeff has been alluding to this for weeks now. He has been saying that we sent two carrier groups to the Middle East so that a major ship can be sunk and used as a pretext for war. Jeff said that these ships are just targets. Why would Jeff think this? The sinking of the battleship Maine in Havana Harbor in 1898 was the pretext to start the Spanish-American War. The sinking of the British cruise ship Lusitania in 1915 was used as a pretext to get us into World War I. The sinking of the Pacific Fleet at Pearl Harbor in 1941 was the pretext to get us into World War II. and North Vietnamese attacks on the U.S. Navy ships Maddox and Turner Joy in 1964 were the pretext for entering the Vietnam War. The truth is that the Maine was not attacked. Its powder magazine blew up by accident. The Lusitania was carrying ammunition from the USA to Great Britain and was therefore a legitimate enemy target. The crime was ours for placing war supplies on a civilian passenger ship, using civilians as a human shield, just like we accuse of Hamas of doing. We had warning that the Japanese were going to attack Pearl Harbor. The military attaché in Jakarta, Dutch Indonesia, had warned the War Department ahead of time, with the exact plans, by the way. That information was not passed on to Pearl Harbor. The Maddox was attacked by three North Vietnamese small boats. There were no American casualties, and there was a single bullet hole in the Maddox. The Turner Joy was not actually attacked by anyone. They opened fire on phantom boats that only the radar saw. Truth really is the first casualties of war. Are we going to buy this ruse again? With nuclear war a prospect, such minor incidents will not suffice as an excuse. An actual serious attack is called for, one like Pearl Harbor. All the players, including Hezbollah, have anti-ship missiles. Anti-ship missiles are ship-to-ship, air-to-ship, and shore-to-ship configurations. We are holding our ships out of range of shore-to-ship missiles, but air-to-ship or ship-to-ship missiles can close the distance and attack our ships. Also, Turkey and Iran have submarines, and they have standoff torpedoes that they can fire from a safe distance and sink one or more American capital ships. Do we know that our ships are vulnerable? We should, but Marxist thinking may blind us to the possibility because Marxist thinking is delusional and self-serving. Realistic thinking follows a real narrative. For example, in 1919, General Billy Mitchell started saying that battleships were obsolete because a relatively inexpensive airplane with a bomb could sink one. Battleships were the most expensive ships ever made. Billy Mitchell advocated for naval aviation launching from aircraft carriers to replace battleships because these planes could deliver bombs over the horizon to targets far away. In 1921, he demonstrated that an airplane dropping a bomb could sink a battleship by doing it in a successful test attack. However, there was more money in battleships than airplanes, so the military-industrial complex hated the idea. However, Billy Mitchell had foresight and kept advocating for air power as the next great innovation in warfare. This was embarrassing to political power, so President Calvin Coolidge had him court-martialed in 1925 to shut him up. Mitchell's defense was freedom of speech, but he was convicted anyways, and he resigned from the Army. Mitchell died in 1936. On December 7, 1941, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor with naval aviation launched off of aircraft carriers and damaged all eight battleships, sinking four of them. Fortunately, our carriers were out to sea, and they were able to defeat a Japanese fleet 6 months later at the Battle of Midway.
No, fortunately involved there, Mitch. As you know, they were sent out to sea, out of the harbor. And those battleships, by the way, I think they were all, most of them were World War One vintage, and they had been refitted and so forth. They were old.
Yes, well, you know, they have to have their contrived narrative, okay, to save themselves. You know, we never even we fired the admiral and the general that was in charge, and then after the facts came out and stuff, we never gave them the
never
rank
rehabilitated
back or anything.
Them. Nope.
Never rehabilitated them.
That was disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. Yep. Your point and your lineage of naval ships being used to get us into wars, fascinating. And I hadn't thought of it in a kind of a collective before. We have three aircraft carrier groups there now, task force groups. We have the Nimitz.
I believe two in the Mediterranean and one in the Red Sea.
Well,
or
the
one
actual
maybe not the Red Sea, but
the Persian Gulf.
Off of the Persian Sea, at least, Persian Sea.
Well, the lower Persian Gulf is the Nimitz. The Eisenhower is in the Red Sea. And the Ford is in the Med. So they've got them spread out. There's three. And if you look at a map, you'll understand. They've kind of made a half circle around the theater of war. So any one of these cities, Hezbollah has hypersonic anti-ship missiles. One is the Yakonts, Y-A-K-H-O-N-T-S, Yakonts, from Russia. And the other one, I forget, it's C something. Anyhow, I think that's a Chinese, but they have them. Now, at any time, any of those ships could be hit and lots of crew killed, maybe sink a destroyer, and they'll blame it on Hezbollah. Do whatever they want, and no one's going to hold them accountable. Sure. The Americans right now are involved with very stealthy operations, as you know. Some of you will remember the Black Hawk Special Forces group called Night Stalker. They've been flying in and out, apparently, of Gaza with small groups, allegedly small, of special forces looking for hostages. And they kind of find them. This is stupid. Anyway, one of the Black Hawks with special forces went down in the eastern Mediterranean. And I've had the story up. It's up there right now. You can read about it. And the military, of course, said nothing for several days. And they said it was a Black Hawk. And somebody else found out it was a Night Stalker group. And then there was another story that I haven't been able to really get much on. But they claim one of our KC-135 tankers went down, air tankers. It was refueling a jet. And somehow the jet bumped the nozzle, we think, and damaged the plane enough to where it fell out of the sky. This was a story. Now, I have no way to certify that, but that's another crash. So we're up to no good there right now. We're not just sitting there twiddling our thumbs. This country is doing a lot of things. But I do think it's eminently clear that one ship, Mitchell, hit with an anti-ship missile could be sunk, could be severely damaged, and that's all it took. That's it.
That's right. Well, another suspicious thing is a helicopter. Went to flight school in the Army back in the 1970s. Now I didn't make it through because I crashed two helicopters in a row. So
did you
after
really?
7 months in school, I crashed two helicopters in a row. So they didn't want me to fly anymore. As a matter of fact, the commandant called me in and asked me to give him one good reason why they should keep me in flight school. And I said, "Well, sir, if I crash three more, I'll be an enemy ace." So he said he was not amused.
That's hilarious. Was it the Coke bottle lenses that gave it away, Mitch, or what?
I don't know. No, it was. I crashed them on auto rotation because I lacked depth perception, and depth perception is very important in auto rotation because you have to pull the collective up when you're about 10 meters off the ground so that the downwash softens your landing. Well, 3 meters, 20 meters, all looks the same to me. So. Anyways, that ended my flying, which was probably a good thing, because sooner or later I would have had a serious crash. At any rate, understanding aviation, you know, you've got to carry either payloads or you're carrying passengers, either air assault troops or something like that. So you basically have three people generally on a helicopter, and that will be your pilot, co-pilot, and a crew chief. And you might throw in, if you've got a gun on there, you might have a gunner also. So a maximum of four. But there's never a need for five crewmen on a helicopter. And there were five people on this. So what were the other two doing is the question. Okay. So I don't think we don't use door gunners that much anymore. So anyways, let me continue. So in 1946, Congress awarded the Congressional Gold Medal to General Mitchell, and when the U.S. Air Force was formed from the Army Air Force in 1947, Mitchell was called the father of the U.S. Air Force. We usually mistreat people with vision. No man is a prophet in his own country. In the post-Vietnam War era, Andrew Marshall was the strategic futurist of the Defense Department. Sweden and China listened to him and adapted his innovations. We didn't, but they did. America. So Sweden had the problem in the 1980s where they had to protect themselves from the Soviet Navy. They did not have the industrial or tax base to build a competing Navy. So they built many small corvettes that could plane on the water and get to very high speeds. They made the hulls of composite materials that radar could not detect and used impellers to evade the detection that cavitating screws in the water emit. They even made as much from brass so there would be less electrical emissions from moving parts. They equipped them with very fast anti-ship missiles, also made of composite materials that would evade radar. The guidance systems of these missiles were redundant, so if the Soviets jammed one, it would switch to another. The Swedes looked at their superior opponent and designed their small navy to be effective against it. The Chinese copied the Swedes. They adapted their navy to deal with their chief opponent's navy. It would be hard for them to build a navy as big as ours, so they focused on just what they needed to defeat our fleet. Just as Billy Mitchell saw that much cheaper airplanes and bombs could sink a battleship, Chinese saw that much cheaper anti-ship missiles could sink our aircraft carriers. This is history repeating itself, okay? They built hypersonic missiles made of radar-defeating composite materials that could fly 5 feet over the surface to make them even more resistant to detection. Then they mass-produced them so they could swarm the fleet with thousands of anti-ship missiles and thereby, for certain, strike their targets. This was area denial slash area access naval tactics. They were not focused on projecting power, just on defeating projected power. They did not build a navy to attack the United States, just a navy to attack our attacking fleets. This was cheaper and more effective. You see, it is the United States that must spend a fortune to protect power so that we can force the world to be gay. China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea are not interested in projecting power, nor in making the world gay. It is an unnecessary budget consideration for them. While we spend money on very expensive ships, they spend it on anti-ship missiles. China can employ these missiles as shore to ship because the Taiwan Strait is only 100 miles wide. They have it covered.
Yeah.
Then they have ship and air platforms that can close with the fleet and fire from a standoff distance. Chinese fighters and small surface ships have anti-ship missiles that can be fired from 110 miles away, taking only 12 minutes to strike their targets.
Phenomenal.
Bombers and medium-sized surface ships can fire from 290 miles away. Surface ships and submarines can fire from 330 miles away. And shore-to-ship missiles can hit a target 1,850 miles away.
Wow. You know, if there is a conflict, it's going to end the era of major power projection by aircraft carriers. That's my guess at this point. They're going to take them down or damage them so badly they're useless. One missile impact on the flight deck of a carrier, and they're basically out of service. Whether they sink or not is almost irrelevant after that. And these missiles that Hezbollah has, the Akhonds, for one, the Russian, will fly at 2,500 miles an hour. It's hypersonic.
Yep.
And it comes in at like 10 feet off the water. What the hell are they going to do? They're going to stop that. So I think we're really on the doorstep of the end of the aircraft carrier task force as being a first world deterrent or threat. It's too easily taken out. You're right about the Chinese. They put a lot of money into anti-ship missiles, and there could be a lot of steel on the bottom very quickly. I agree.
So just like World War II is the end of the battleship, World War III is the end of the aircraft carrier. Okay.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It's the same thing. Innovation, a cheaper means to attack.
Right.
From a bomb, from an airplane, to an anti-ship missile. It was just a matter of time.
Okay, look what the Ukrainians... One other thing. The Ukrainians have been using our latest drone naval weapons. They're little unmanned, high speed, almost like a big jet ski with like a 500-pound armor-piercing explosive in the front of it. And they've sunk several Russian ships. They sank two landing ships. Like, they were not very big. They're small landing craft, not a big landing craft, not like an LST. But they sunk two of them with these things. And they couldn't be seen on radar, apparently. So I don't know. Yeah. It's crazy.
Well, let's go back to Billy Mitchell. What Billy Mitchell was showing, this is right after World War One. He was showing that air power was going to be more effective than naval power. Now we've seen the complete evolution of this to where naval power is going to possibly become irrelevant because air power can more cheaply accomplish the same goals, okay, or at least defeat navies anywhere. Yeah. So the United States has a Marxist government that thinks the strength of our faggot diversity can defeat this without actually trying to adapt to what has been developed against us. We are the most powerful navy in the world. So out of our arrogance, we don't think we have to adapt to the changing technical environment. This led to our first Pearl Harbor. After all, the Navy exists to give people of color, women, and LGBT people jobs as ship captains. Our current chief of naval operations is the first woman to have that job.
Wow. She
has that job because she is a woman.
You sure that's a woman?
Yeah,
I looked at the pictures. I'm not sure.
Like
I don't know.
Okay.
Here's another angle, Mitch. Hold on.
Yes.
If, let's just say, the Gaza massacre runs its course and these poor, poor people are forced into Egypt or somewhere, and many of them agree to leave and so forth, and it starts to simmer down. If the powers that be want a massive regional war or whatever they want, they'll just go ahead and still take out a ship with a missile, and they'll blame Iran. They're going to get what they want. There's really no way to stop them.
Yes.
Figuring out what they want is the hard part. But they'll get it, whatever it is. It's evil. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, pure evil. So now I want to cover some land strategy, because we have seen things kind of come a full circle. And it's going to be two aspects, just sort of general strategy. And then I want to get into the tactics that are being used in Israel and the fighting now, so that you can understand what you're seeing when you look at the few videos that come out, okay? So we are seeing a return to trench warfare. We have forgotten all of the innovations in technology and tactics of the past century. This is Marxism at work. Marxism does not create or innovate. It destroys and wastes human lives. Marxism does not respond to historical changes. It inverts past history that suits its current politically correct narrative. The trench warfare of World War I was a human catastrophe. In Europe, it was called the Last Generation because so many of their men were killed off in the trenches. Military leaders threw men's lives away with reckless abandon. Tactics had not kept up with technology. The machine gun made frontal assaults with infantry deadly and futile. Hydraulic artillery recoil buffers made artillery more deadly. Previously, after firing, you would have to lay the gun in again to fire the next round. With these hydraulic recoil buffers, you did not have to reposition the gun after each round fired. Field artillery was quicker and more accurate. You could lay down barrages very effectively. This made frontal attacks with armor more deadly. This made positional warfare pointless. In response to this, two British officers, J.F.C. Fuller and B.H. Liddell Hart, developed tactics for maneuver warfare. You see, rapid movement made both the machine gun and field artillery less dangerous. Field artillery cannot shift fires fast enough, and moving infantry on armored personnel carriers protected by the infantry from machine gun fire and speed made it more difficult to hit them. Mechanized maneuver units could have self-propelled artillery that could keep up with the armor. Combined arms working with air power could have tactical air support attacking enemy formations before the troops even arrived to make contact. Speed and armor protected these forces that could rapidly overcome enemy positions. It was called Lightning War, or Blitzkrieg.
Right.
Just like with Billy Mitchell, the British did not take Fuller and Liddell Hart seriously. But German officers, like Heinz Guderian, took it to heart and developed the equipment and coordination to make it happen. Germany conquered Europe with these tactics. From World War II until the end of the century, all nations used these tactics to great effect. It became the standard of conventional war. When I was an armored cavalry officer in the 1980s to 90s, this is how I trained and fought. We called it the airland battle tactics. During the Gulf War in 1991, these tactics worked beautifully. In the Battle of 73 Easting, the 2nd Armored Cavalry Regiment, which is two battalions, attacked two Iraqi Republican Guard Armored Brigades, 8 battalions, and destroyed them, taking out 159 tanks and 260 other vehicles and destroyed both brigades, and this is in a day. The 2nd Armored Cavalry Regiment only had 6 men killed in action and lost only 1 tank. Colonel Douglas McGregor was in the 2nd Armored Cavalry Regiment for this battle.
Huh.
So Israel used these tactics in 1956, 67, and 73 wars to great effect. But in the 1973 war, they were already making mistakes. You see, tanks must work with the infantry. They cannot work alone because they cannot see very much, and you can easily sneak up on them. As aerial Sharon spread across the Sinai, leaving their infantry behind, the Egyptian infantry knocked out a lot of tanks with anti-tank missiles. Also, tanks are meant for open terrain, not cities. The armor on top of tanks is thin, and infantry firing rockets at the top of a tank can easily kill it. Sharon took his tanks into Suez City without infantry at great cost to his armor. He had to withdraw. Sharon got overconfident and broke with sound tactics in his haste. So what has happened? Russia invaded in February 2022, invaded Ukraine, using only 90,000 men in maneuver warfare to grab great swaths of Ukrainian territory. The Ukrainians have wasted 500,000 men killed since then to gain nothing. Even the Russians are fighting positional warfare in Avdiivka and Bakhmut to great cost and little gain. Yes, Zionists control Russia. It is about killing people, not winning anything. You can tell a tree by its fruits. Okay, so as I watch the Gaza War, I see positional warfare. I see Israeli tanks operating without infantry support. Why do the Israelis do this? Because of scientific Marxism. Marx said that many useful products make people unnecessary. This is a World Economic Forum has taken this to heart, too. That's why they need to kill 7.5 billion of us. The Israelis developed the Trophy Active Armored Defense System, also called Windbreaker. This is a radar rapid computer system that tracks incoming rounds and fires projectiles at them to stop incoming anti-tank rockets. They also use standoff plates and reactive armor. Anti-tank rockets are shaped charges. You will notice a cylindrical bar sticking out in front of the rocket. This is the standoff. A shaped charge is a cone with C4 shaped around it. When it ignites, the shaped charge forms a jet of flame that burns through the armor. The standoff gives that flame jet time to form properly. Some are inside the rocket capsule instead of standing out front. It is merely internal. This jet of flame is super fast. When the rocket hits, it just looks like an explosion. But time-lapse photography shows it to be a jet of flame. When this flame burns through the armor and makes a pinhole inside the tank, striking air, the flame is rapidly and violently sucked into the tank. With it, it carries the copper from the cone mold that the C4 is shaped around. The violence of it entering the tank causes internal metal to spall violently off the inside, and this spalling rattles around violently within the tank, chopping up the people inside. The Israeli army, the flame is rapidly and violently sucked into the tank. With it, it carries the copper from the cone mold that the C4 is shaped around. The violence of it entering the tank causes internal metal to spall violently off the inside, and this spalling rattles around violently within the tank, chopping up the people inside. The Israeli army flame is rapidly and violently sucked into the tank. With it, it carries the copper from the cone mold that the C4 is shaped around. The violence of it entering the tank causes internal metal to spall violently off the inside, and this spalling rattles around violently within the tank, chopping up the people inside. The Israeli army saw a video today, and the narration is good and stuff, but it says, okay, all these tanks, they just seem to be sitting there, but they don't look like they're destroyed. So let me just tell you right now, what does a destroyed tank look like? Okay, because this is going to be used to fool you. Okay, a destroyed tank looks like any other tank. It has a hole in it. Okay, just one hole is all it takes. Because see that shaped charge, what it does is it burns one little hole in the tank. The spalling inside, it's the inside with all the spalling, the metal clanking around in it, that kills all the people inside, okay? It does not necessarily set off any explosives inside the tank. It can, but not necessarily. Most tanks that I've seen that were killed just had one hole in it.
Okay, so hold on. This is fascinating. What you've just explained on this program, I've never heard or seen anywhere else. The idea of a tank looking perfectly normal, although the crew is dead, the tank is destroyed, is quite real. The tank does not have to have its turret blown off at all. Now, is that a depleted uranium round that punches a little tiny hole in the tank? Or is it another round?
Either one. A shaped charge does that. Remember, the shaped charge has just got a flame jet, and it's just burning through. When it gets a pinhole and touches the air inside, it actually sucks the
everyone
copper
is killed
in,
instantly.
And it spalls the metal off. Oh yeah, I mean it's just all that metal that spalls off when it violently enters the thing. The internal spall is what bounces around, and it'll chop everybody up. It'll chop up the wiring, the equipment, and stuff too. Okay, in other words, it does the damage on the inside of the tank. Now the depleted uranium rod does the same thing. Let me, if you do slow motion view of it, so uranium is a pyroscopic material, meaning that if you friction it, it will catch on fire. Okay, so when this depleted uranium rod hits the outside armor, as soon as it makes contact, it begins burning. And it's actually, as it's going through, it's also being sucked through by the flame and the heat that's at the tip of the rod that's burning. Okay, as soon as it makes a pinhole on the other side, it violently enters the inside of the tank. It also spalls metal, and then you have the addition of the depleted uranium rod bouncing around inside the tank and killing everybody in it. People basically look like lasagna or spaghetti when you look at a tank that's been hit. Okay, it's
something,
not slight.
They'll never show that to anybody.
Bad.
They'll never show that scene
won't.
To anybody. Wow.
No.
Fascinating. Now, the idea of a little flame on a shaped charge, give me a little more of a mental picture of that. You fire a shaped charge. Okay, go ahead.
So a shaped charge is you get a copper cone and then cover the outside of that copper cone with C4. Okay, when you detonate it, it looks to us like it's blowing up on the enemy tank, okay? But if you do time lapse, like slow it down with photography,
slow-mo.
As soon as it detonates, what's happening is that shaped charge is burning violently as a jet, okay? It's actually burning. It's just that it's going so fast that your eye doesn't pick it up. It is that flame that the shaped charge is shooting out that actually melts through the armor, and then once it,
when you say shoot, Mitch, excuse me, when you say shape charge flame shooting out, how does a shape charge get to the tank?
Well, it's in the rocket. The rocket, rocket that you see them firing, that is a shaped charge. There's
the RPG.
Inside of that is a cone.
Like rocket.
Right,
okay.
The RPG. Now, sometimes you'll see a little extension on the front of it. What that's for is to when the round hits the tank, what that is it's a standoff. And what it is it's to give the – this is just in a matter of microseconds, but it gives the flame jet time to form, because it's that flame jet that's going to burn through the tank. Okay, it burns through the armor. People don't understand explosives. You can understand it a little bit, like if you know what explosives do. If you put an explosive on, for example, I used to fire mortars. Okay, and when you fire mortars, you determine how far the mortar is going to go by how much cheese you put on it. And what the cheese is, it's just these like little squares, and you peel them off, and you use just as many squares as you need to reach your target. And when you put the mortar down, when you put it down the tube, a little spark sets that explosive on fire and propels it out of the tube and towards the target. Now, what we would do is the excess cheese that we had, and cheese is just the plastic explosives, we would light that to cook our food with. Because if you let it on, if you do not have it contained, it just burns. Sort of like gunpowder. If you have gunpowder in a bullet, it propels the bullet forward. But if you pour gunpowder on the ground and put a match to it, it just burns. It doesn't blow up, it just burns. All explosives are basically the same way. If you light them in the air and you don't contain them, they just rapidly deflagrate or burn, okay? When you contain that, that's when you get all the
pressure
and gases pushing
projectile forward. You build up a lot of pressure.
Forward.
It's got to go somewhere.
Right.
The RPGs we've seen Hamas use in these videos, they made them themselves. Mm-hmm. Those are produced right there in Gaza, underground.
Well, they're easy to make. Ship charges are easy to make. It's not... Well, I don't want to say it's not rocket science. It is rocket science, but you know, on a very small scale. So let me give you an example for like the Twin Towers. So you remember that cross that was sitting at the bottom that they had to get rid of because it was a Christian symbol? Well, the reason they really had to get rid of it is if you looked at it, the beams were not deformed in any way except on the four ends, and there the metal was melted. Okay. So if you have a sheet charge, okay, and what the sheet charge is, it's just a triangular piece of plastic explosive, and you wrap that around the beam, okay, and it'll look like an explosion, but what is happening is it's just burning, because remember, this is kind of not really contained. So you put the triangle back away from where you want it to cut. These are called cutting charges. So when you detonate these, what happens is it rapidly burns at very high heat, and it melts the iron, and it gives you that effect. So it's just burned on the ends, actually the end where you put the base of the triangle. So it's just think of it as burning it instead of blowing it up. Look at it with your naked eye, it looks like an explosion, but it's really just burning super fast, okay, so that it melts the metal. So a lot of it has to do with, most people don't understand explosives and how explosives work, okay, and they get the wrong idea about things. Plus the fact when you look at them, it looks like an explosive, but actually what's happening is burning. Okay, because sheet charges and cutting charges are not contained. It's just burning at high heat very fast, and the same with the shaped charge. Okay, by putting it in the cone shape with the tip of the cone pointing forward where you're hitting, it's actually just burning through with this jet burning out. The cone forces it into a flame. But it's very fast, and you can't see it with your naked eye. Okay, but that is what is happening with a shaped charge. Okay, so all anti-tank missiles that you see, they worked with shaped charges. I mean, they worked with shaped charges. All of them do. It's the same mechanism on all of them. The only thing different is another tank will shoot a depleted uranium SABO round at another tank, and that's a different mechanism. But they're all the same. So you can be fooled. Okay. So when I saw the picture of he was thinking, well, maybe the crew just abandoned them or something. Well, no, the people inside are probably dead. Okay. It's like I've seen many tanks that have been hit, and all there is like no more than a 1-inch diameter hole somewhere on the turret that it has burned through, but everybody inside is dead. Okay.
Wow. So a lot of these abandoned tanks you see in the videos of Ukraine, they're not abandoned. They're just tombs.
No, yeah. The people inside are dead. How fast can you repair those? Well, you got to wire everything up. You got to put brand new equipment inside. And you got to patch that hole somehow. But you can't really patch hole in armor. Okay, once it's weakened, it's weakened. Sort of like a bulletproof vest. Once it's been hit, then it's weakened. Okay, the next hit might go through. So,
well, very interesting. Never had that made so clear. It sounds like there really is no defense if you're inside a tank. The right weapon used on you, and you don't have much of a chance.
Well, so you know where I got this information on how to defeat a Merkava tank?
No.
The Hamas has passed these flyers out to everyone describing how to do it.
Wow. Well, 88 tanks claimed destroyed. And you just get the feeling that Hamas is not going to lie anywhere, not even in the same universe, with the lies coming out of Tel Aviv. It's not going to happen. They're telling the truth.
Okay,
basically.
Well, listen, Hamas said they destroyed 160 vehicles.
Yes,
the information
that's APCs,
about the 88 tanks comes from aerial photography. That's not Hamas.
Independent
aerial photography says that.
Gotcha. Well, and you never see any stories of the ferocious combat that's going on the ground. The Israelis are taking massive casualties, in my view, at this point. It's a guess, but I think it's a good one. And the reason the infantry is not accompanying the tanks and protecting them is because those men and women do not want to die. They'd much rather be playing with their smartphones and TikTok videos. That's what they are. They're not. That's not a first-rate army. No, not in my view.
No, they have all these diverse equity type people in there. Okay,
right.
It is not. Listen. A female soldier cannot. A female infantryman is not the same as a male infantryman.
No way.
They're just not the same. When I went through officer candidate school, they had women go through with us, okay? And OCS is basically infantry tactics. So if we have, say we have 10 people in a squad and we have a light machine gun, okay? If it's 10 men, then you can shuffle around who's carrying the light machine gun. And you don't do this when you're making a movement to contact. If you're making a movement to contact, then the machine gunner will have the machine gun. But if you're like if you're making just a cross-country movement to go get in position to make your movement to contact, then at that point you kind of share around carrying the machine gun so that the machine gunner doesn't get totally exhausted. Okay. Well, if you have 10 men, that's 10 guys who can carry it over a 20-mile march. Okay. You can have one guy carry it for 2 hours and another guy do it. Well, let's say you got five women in there. Now five men have to carry the machine gun. And that's exactly what happened in OCS. The women were not required to carry the machine gun because they couldn't do it. Okay. Our army actually has women in infantry now. And that means that the men have to take the slack up for them.
Gotcha.
They have female rangers. Get through ranger course, had to lower the standards for the women.
Oh, I'm
so
sure
that
I've
they
read
could
stories.
Get through and get the ranger tab.
How weak is
it
our army now?
It makes the ranger tab not worth having.
Agreed. How weak is our army now, Mitchell, at this point? How bad is it?
Well, I think it's pretty, I think it's probably useless, actually.
Wow. Wow.
You know, and what, you know, why would you go in the army? Do you, if you go in the U.S. Army, you're going to die. Are you going to give your life for abortion, for gay rights, for Israel? Because that's all you're going to give your life for is gay rights, abortion, and Israel. You're not going to be defending your country. You're not going to be defending democracy. We don't have a democracy. We don't have free and fair elections. You know?
No. I couldn't agree more. And, how enlightening. Thank you. Wow. All right, my friend. Wonderful job. Talk to you next week. We'll see what happens, but I think don't forget the Gulf of Tonkin and all the other ships that have been used to take us to war. You just take one missile. Doesn't really matter who fires it. An anti-ship missile hits one of our destroyers or pokes a nice big hole in the side of the Gerald Ford, which it could. And we're at war. That's that easy. So we'll see what they want. If they want a war, they're going to get their war. Thank you, Mitch.
And if Hezbollah, Iran, or Turkey want to do it, we can do it for them.
You got it.
Don't forget that. We're that evil.
No, it's true. We are. All right, my friend. Take care. Thank you, Mitch. Great program.
Okay, you too. See you next Tuesday.
All righty. Very good. Mitchell Henderson. And then you're not going to get any better insight, information, and wisdom than you're going to get from Mitch. Okay, that's it for tonight. Back with you in 21 hours. Thanks for being here. Take care.